Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us once again on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. For this episode, I'm joined by Max Wandsberg to talk about his latest book, The Power of the Tao, 7 Essential Habits for Living in Flow, Fulfillment and Resilience. Max Wandsberg is a best-selling author whose previous books have sold over 1 million copies and been published in 15 languages. He's a former partner at McKinsey & Company and senior partner at Headhunters, Heidrick & Struggles, and Korn Ferry. Most recently, he was a director at McKinsey & Company and is based in London. In The Power of the Tao, Max shows the reader how to live in a state of flow all of the time, based on the enduring ancient wisdom of Taoist principles and practice. Hi Max, and thank you very much for joining me today on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you about your new book, The Power of the Tao. And my first question is, could you tell us briefly what the book is about and why you decided to write it?
Thanks, Thea. Well, this book is about how to achieve a state of flow in the way that you live your life. And as a result of that, how to find greater joy, fulfillment, and resilience as well. The book has 7 tips for how to achieve this state, and they're based on some research I've been doing into the very powerful principles and habits from the ancient Chinese tradition of Taoism.
Well, that sounds very exciting, but could you tell us more about this flow state?
Okay, so the flow state is where you're like an athlete who is in the zone or on top of your game. There are various different descriptions of that. Most people have experienced this state at least for a moment or a minute or two in their life, perhaps during sport or artistic activity, like singing or painting or cooking or even doing the household chores. Or sometimes at work as well, when you're doing a project and everything just seems to be humming along really well. It's kind of when you're on top of your game, you seem to be doing something almost automatically. You don't even have to think about it. You probably lose a sense of time because everything's just, you're just so absorbed in it. And the interesting thing about this is that when you're in that zone, the research does show that you are 200% more creative, 400% more motivated, 5 times more productive. So it's a really interesting state to be in. And the thing is, most of the research into this flow state has looked at people doing very specific tasks. But I wanted to show how you can really live in this flow state, not just for a minute or an hour, but actually for all of the time, or at least for most of the time.
Yeah, that's very fascinating. But why did you decide to share all of that knowledge in the book and write The Power of the Tao?
Well, good question. I mean, I think every book starts from a different reasons, but there are 2 generic reasons why we do anything in life. First, there's a sort of long-term passion, and second, there's some sort of trigger that makes you do something. And for me, the longer-term passion is that I've basically, for about 3 decades, been really interested in how to live in this state of flow, which is very fulfilling and very productive. And we'll talk a little bit more about, I'm sure. But I was also interested not just for how to do this for short periods, but also how to live in flow all of the time. And I've experimented for many years on myself. I've researched it with the people I've coached, and I have over the years studied Taoism quite deeply. And I found some answers that I wanted to share with people. So that was the longer term passion reason for wanting to write this. The shorter term trigger was actually COVID. Like many people, I had more time than I thought. I don't think I ever caught COVID, but I had more time during the lockdowns. So those are the main 2 reasons I wrote them. There was a 3rd reason as well, slightly broader reason, which is, I guess over the last 5 to 10 years, the world has become a much more uncertain place with war, inflation, cost of living, climate change, all of those kind of things. And with this state of flow, you can actually be much more resilient to these changes. So I wanted to share some helpful tips on that as well.
Mm. Well, yeah, that's great. And I think I get what being in a flow is like for a specific activity. Probably all of us have experienced being in a flow at some point in their lives. But what is it like to live in flow all of the time?
That's a great question. It is a great question. In many ways, living in flow all the time is just like a whole succession of living in flow for a project or a task. In other words, you get the deep enjoyment and the creativity and the motivation in the whole series of all the things that you do in sequence. However, I think there is one big difference between living in flow on a task and living in flow for your life. For a specific task or a project, we have some control over whether or not we actually do it. But for life more broadly, as John Lennon said, life is what happens to us when we're making other plans. Things come along that we weren't expecting. And you to live in flow across the lifetime, you've got to sort of develop a mindset where what Shakespeare called the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune can't destabilize you too much. And it's really like finding your inner yoga that will span across all the individual activities. So that really is one extra thing over and above the flow of an individual state, I think.
Well, if it's so good, what's the catch here? Why don't more people just live in flow?
All the time. Yeah, well, you're quite, that's another really good question. I mean, firstly, there are actually people who do live in flow most of the time. And I have met them. And, some of these are quite famous people, like, Nelson Mandela, for example, at an extreme. He had to suffer all sorts of things and sort of seemed to retain a calmness about him. But there are normal people as well. So there are, it is possible. Secondly, I think the reason, one of the reasons people don't do this all the time, they just don't know that it's possible and they don't know all the benefits. And I think that finally there's a discipline point. It's a bit like exercise and diet. We all know that we should be doing at least 10,000 steps a day and we shouldn't eat sugar, but it does require some discipline. And to get there, you sort of have to have seen for yourself or in other people what the benefits are of getting into that longer term flow state.
Yeah, it definitely requires some discipline. So, all right, let's talk a little bit more about the book now. So, in it, you uncover seven different principles of Taoism. So, could you tell us what those principles are? And yeah, just tell us more about them and what they relate to.
Sure. So look, overall, if you want to live in flow for most of the time, then you have to have a particular kind of mindfulness. And I'm not exactly talking about meditation, although meditation does have a role to play. I'm talking about a way in which you, first of all, can subconsciously see very clearly how everything in the world is kind of connected together and the way in which it's connected and the patterns and principles by which all these things work, whether it's relationships and people or activities at work or whatever. So firstly, to see how things are connected and then to react in an intuitive and spontaneous way rather than overthinking things. So these principles fall into these two main categories. And as a result, as Bruce Lee, who was the famous martial artist, said, although he did actually take this from one of the Taoist classics, the three things were moving, when you're moving, to be like water, when you're still, to be like mirror, and when you respond, to be like an echo. We'll come on and see what that means. But I mean, essentially, to moving, be like water means to act naturally, move efficiently, and ideally nurture all people and all things, which is what water does. And still be like a mirror means to be able to see things without prejudices. And to respond like an echo is to respond without having to deliberate over things all the time. So after exploring all of those principles of Taoism for literally decades, I concluded that basically the principles of habit and the habits of Taoism were the things that were most helpful to get people into this state of flow.
And what are those principles?
Okay, so the seven principles are as follows. Although I should say, of course, Taoism is a, some people call it a religion. I like to think of it more of a philosophy. Whatever it is, it's also a very practical set of things. And there are a lot of principles in Taoism, but I pulled out the seven that I think are the most useful for helping us to get into flow. And as I mentioned, three of them are about how we see the world. Three of them are about how we interact or cooperate with the world. And then there's a final principle about mastery. So I'll run through each of these briefly. And each of these principles has a kind of habit associated with it. So let's start with the first principle, which is yin-yang. And this is something which lets us see the subtleties and the shades of grey within a particular situation, and also how to be more attuned to the energy flows that cause change to happen. For the better or for the worse. I mean, most people are already probably familiar with the idea of yin yang from its famous circular black and white symbol, which seems very popular as a tattoo these days, the yin yang symbol. That symbol represents how everything in the cosmos comprises both yin and yang. And that applies to everything from our moods to our relationships to business opportunities. So in the yin-yang, we've got yang, which stands for bright, and that's about expansion, opening out, being evident, explicable, purposeful. It's generally a positive kind of aspect. So if a mood or a relationship or a business situation is working really well, then we might think of it as being mainly yang. In contrast, you've got yin, which stands for dark or shaded or hidden or mysterious. It has a sort of negative connotation, but it does also stand for receptive power, or the power of receptivity. So the key point of this yin-yang principle is to notice that sort of lurking inside any positive yang-like situation. There's always a little bit of yin that can at some point grow and come to dominate the situation. But also the reverse is true as well. Within any yin, there's some yang that can come around and kind of help you out. So for example, smart people know that their strengths, which are basically yang, can sometimes turn into their weaknesses, which are yin. Or winning the lottery seems to start as positive kind of yang for most people, but it can turn into a negative yin for some winners, as we've seen. And the main thing here is that by getting good at noticing in any given situation, whether it's a meeting or a relationship or a business opportunity, both the yin and the yang, we can see how the situation might change in the future, with that change sort of kind of being powered by the continuous interplay between the yin and the yang. So one of the problems, I think, of our human condition is that we like to label things quite quickly, either as good or bad, big or small, or happy or sad. Then if by using this yin-yang concept, we become more aware that the situation contains various subtleties, it helps us to react more constructively, whether that yin-yang is in our mood or relationships or business situation. So this is explained in more detail, obviously, in the book, including with some stories and some everyday examples, with one story, for example, showing that breaking your leg could actually not be a disaster, but something to be grateful for. So that's the yin-yang.
Well, that's great. Thank you for explaining that. And then the second principle is Li. So what could you tell us about that?
Yeah, one? Okay. So, I mean, the second is, as you say, Li is the Chinese word for patterns, basically. And the ability to recognize patterns is really important if you want to live in flow for extended periods of time. Just before getting into it, it is interesting to notice that the Chinese character for Li, patterns, is a combination of two other characters, one of which means jade, as in the gemstone jade, and the other means interior. So these two symbols together come up, create the Chinese character for patterns, Li. Why is that the case? Well, it's all the Chinese characters are interesting. This one particularly interesting. when Chinese craftsmen were carving jade in the olden days, they paid a lot of attention to the marbled veins and the patterns inside the stone. Firstly, so that they could avoid wasting the material, which was and still is more valuable than gold, so they didn't want to waste any. And secondly, so they could sort of follow the curves of the grain, the marbled veins in the stone, to produce a gem with a shape that sort of fitted the raw material in a natural way and with minimal effort. So the Chinese character symbolizes patterns and trend lines that also can be valuable to us in daily life. In other words, if we follow these kind of trend, if we can see the trend lines in the first place and follow them, then we are able to work with the grain of the pattern. And that's normally more productive than trying to hack across it or just ignore it completely. So examples, for example, would be in the physical world is the simplest examples of where noticing these patterns can be helpful. If you're cutting some meat or vegetables, most people obviously tend to slice along the line of the striations, not across them. Another pattern is, it's a dynamic pattern, is the way that you walk or your posture. And noticing the pattern that you have there can help you with your endurance. And there are iPhone apps even to help you with that. Or another set of patterns in the physical world is the way that you sleep. And obviously, as we all know, you can sleep better by aligning your sleep with the circadian rhythms. We kind of all know this, but it's a question of actually just simply getting around to doing it in many cases. And then there are other examples of patterns in the business world, for example. I mean, you can't build a business strategy without seeing the various market segments that constitute the bigger pattern of your overall market. So on this patterns thing, the sculptor Michelangelo kind of summed it up, as some of your listeners will be familiar with the quote, that the sculpture is already complete within the marble block before I start my work, he said. It's already there. I just have to chisel away the superfluous material. So he had seen the pattern of the figure and then kind of just released it. So this is the second habit about how we see the world. And this pattern, Lee, is the key thing, is to pay attention to patterns that are within your ecosystem so that you can kind of live more easily with that ecosystem.
That's very interesting. Thank you. And then next up is Ziran. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Very good pronunciation. Yes, Ziran. I mean, this is the third principle, and it's the third of these ones about how we see the world as it really truly is operating. It's quite a hard word to translate from Chinese. It has many different aspects and facets. It's the core meaning of the word, though, in Taoism and in flow, is that it is, Ziran is the process by which something happens naturally. Which also sort of means the process by which something happens spontaneously or by itself, automatically. And some people translate it as things happening just as they ought to happen, which means just as they ought to happen according to how the cosmos works, not necessarily merely as ordained by kind of some law or society. So it's a sort of naturalness, really. And inspired by this principle, the Taoist believes it's better to work with things rather than against them. And it's best to do this in a way that is true both to this Ziran natural way, the quintessential way, both that the world works and also the way that you work. In other words, I mean, don't try to be too smart and think you can outwit and, you know, everyone and everything. I mean, to simplify horribly, to gain flow, we need to understand the Ziran, the natural way that the forces we are working with operate in our cosmos, and act in with an understanding of them to our advantage. And that's where the yin yang that we talked about earlier, the energies and the li, the patterns, kind of can help us. I mean, Western philosophy, I think since Aristotle, Newton, and Descartes, all those guys, has seen the world as a kind of mechanism with events unfolding in a series of causes and effects. But in contrast, the Taoist sees the world as an organism where things happen spontaneously and simultaneously, and they arise mutually. So, for example, does a mountain create a river, or does a river create a mountain? Well, in fact, the mountain and the river arise mutually and spontaneously because the mountain causes condensation of water from the air, and that runs down to create the river, but the river simultaneously carves out a valley, which then defines the mountain. So this integrated nature of things is, and the sort of Zuran natural way that multiple things operate together, is pretty key to both Taoism and, I think, the ability to live in flow. And by paying attention to this, we can be alert to, the unintended consequences that can happen if we force things too hard or we're out of tune with things too much. And rather than pushing the river, which obviously is kind of impossible, the Taoist favors using the river, or in a very advanced version, even being the river. So actually, most modern enlightened leaders and managers use this principle quite often. I mean, they find it more effective to tempt in and draw in and nudge people to do things that in ways that amplify the flow of those people on their team. And they kind of know that forcing a change in a non-natural, non-Zuran way is not normally sustainable for long periods of time. So by paying attention to this Zuran, to the natural ways of things and how things relate to each other, that's a pretty important third step in seeing how the world works so we can operate and live in greater flow.
Definitely. And that concludes the first group of three principles. And then Pu is the first of three principles on how you choose to interact with your environment. So what could you tell us about it?
Right. So now we're coming on to these three principles that are a little bit more about how you engage with the world. And yes, this first principle in Chinese, it means simplicity. It's Pu, P-U, if you wanted to write it in English, Pu. So this really is about simplicity and clarity of understanding. So if you adopt Pu, it means that you can see things without the distortions of the filters and the biases and the prejudgments that we all have. And by doing that, we have a better chance of living in flow, because we can get an accurate and insightful view of the world that we're interacting with. And that normally means that we can get things right first time. We don't have to go back and redo things. We just do it right first time, and we move seamlessly on to the next thing. It's about, if you like, seeing the, what some people call the unvarnished reality of our team, our relationships, our environment. And we can absorb and see what's going on without filtering out our sensory messages. And that allows us to then achieve our full potential. You and the listeners may have read a book by Benjamin Hoff called The Tao of Pu, which sat on the New York Times bestseller list for 49 weeks. So the title of that book, The Tao of Pu, makes a pun on the word Pu, because he uses it to mean both the character from A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh stories, but also Pu, as we've just talked about, in the Taoist sense of simplicity and clarity. And just to illustrate, in this book, there's a character called Rabbit who shuttles around and overthinks things and is very detail-oriented, but he doesn't actually come up with much. Whereas in contrast, Pooh Bear has a more open-minded approach. He often happens to find solutions to problems that the group is facing in a non-deliberate and unexpected way, because he has a simplicity and clarity of perspective. So, I mean, how do we get that is, of course, the next question. Well, meditation clearly does help. And in Taoism, there's a process of calming and decluttering the mind, which is often referred to rather poetically as fasting the heart mind. And it's also called sweeping the lodging house of the spirit. In other words, it's about trying to get rid of the biases that you have and the prejudgments. And there is a classic text which describes this a little elegantly, I think, the benefits, in which Li Zi, a Taoist master, says, describes the process of being in this state of clarity. My body is aligned with my mind, he said. My mind with my energies with the cosmos, and the cosmos is aligned with the Tao. Because of this intimate union, I perceive any interference in the universal harmony of things, whether it comes from the eight wildernesses far away or from between my eyebrows and my eyelashes. I can't say by which organ I perceive it. I know without knowing how I knew. So this Taoist first principle, this Taoist principle of Pu, points to the value of just seeing things clearly if we're going to live in flow. We do that partly through meditation and other ways to avoid the stranglehold of our biases.
Yeah, that's great. And then next is Wu Wei. So what is that about?
So Wu Wei is probably the closest single concept to this idea of flow. And it, in Chinese, the word means literally no action, but normally it's interpreted as effortless action, or sometimes as uncontrived action. It's about a person being so in tune with the natural order of things that he or she can perform a specific task really through intuition alone and in a completely spontaneous way, with apparently no preconceived thought and indeed no effort. So this clearly does correspond to a state of flow at the task, at the level of a specific task. And there are many Taoist stories that illustrate this Wu Wei in action. They tend to be called by the academics knack stories, because they show how someone's got a particular knack to have how to do something if they're well practiced in an art, and they can normally deliver exceptional performance but without apparently any effort at all. And one of the most famous examples of these stories is that of a cook called Cook Ding. And it's worth kind of hearing. So just to read the story out here, Cook Ding was cutting up an ox for his ruler when the king asked him how he made it look so simple. And the cook replied, "When I first began cutting up these huge oxen, I saw nothing but this entire vast carcass. But now I deal with it in a spirit-like manner. Feeling along the natural lines, my knife slips between the great crevices and slides through the great cavities. Taking advantage of the nooks and crannies that thus presented, my knife steers clear of the ligaments and the big bones." And he continued, "An ordinary cook changes his knife every month. A good cook changes his knife every year. But I have used this knife for 19 years. It has cut up several thousand oxen, and yet by carving with art, its edge is as sharp as if it had come just from the whetstone. The edge of the knife has no appreciable thickness. When that which is so thin enters between the joints, how easily it moves along. The blade has more than enough room to glide casually in. But whenever I come to a complicated joint and see that there be some difficulty, I proceed with caution. I don't allow my eyes to wander from the place, and I move my hand very slowly. Then, in a very slight movement of the knife, the part is quickly separated and drops like a clod of earth to the ground." So that's a much quoted story of somebody doing a quite complicated thing with apparent ease. And there are more day-to-day examples really as well, like the way a child learns a language is another example of Wu Wei. Child generally learns to speak unintentionally and without a conscious will even to learn. Whereas an adult learning a foreign language tends to invest a lot of effort in memorizing and vocabulary, grammar, pronunciation. So the child is learning by a sort of flow or Wu Wei style, and that is often much more efficient than doing it by the more cumbersome approach. So this is a principle that will help us to be in flow. It's hard to achieve Wu Wei directly, because the more that you try not to try, which is essentially what Wu Wei is about, not trying too hard, the less that you succeed if you try to do it consciously. But the other principles of Taoism can help you get there. And some of the tips in the book, I hope, will be helpful. I mean, even if you just watch as you walk down the street how the garbage collectors are swinging the garbage cans around, you will notice that some of them do it apparently effortlessly, whereas the new ones, you know, struggle to do it. And just thinking about how in your daily life you can do things in a more easeful manner can be helpful.
Absolutely. And then the final principle in this group of three is D. So what could you tell us about this one?
Okay, this word de, which is spelled D-E in English translation, is a Chinese word that again has a wide range of meanings, including inner power, strength of character, personal values, things like that. So the principle de, which sounds a bit strange to the Western ear, is at the core of how to stay in flow across your lifetime, not just for a few minutes or hours. So we can see this core importance of de, as it's called, by looking at its Chinese characters again. So the character combines one symbol for to go with another symbol for virtue. So this principle of de literally means the way that you choose to go with virtue. So de is about having strong personal values and radiating them in how you express yourself to your friends and the cosmos, and perhaps how you nurture people too. And if you are in tune with all of this, that can give you a magnetic or charismatic influence, even as we've seen people like Mahatma Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King. These people all kind of radiated their values in a way that other people do, but not everybody does. But an important caveat here is that this de, or potency, as we could perhaps call it, is not about showing off. And there's a Taoist classic book called the Tao Te Ching, and there's one translation by Ron Hogan, which is a brilliant, very common parlance translation, talks about this, where the book says, people with integrity don't even think about it. That's how you can tell they have integrity. Other people talk about how much integrity they have when they really don't have much, if any. Truly powerful people don't do anything, but they get the job done. Other people are always busy doing something, but nothing ever gets done. So just to summarize here, de is kind of the set of ways in which you live and habitually engage with the people around you and the environment. It's a coherent set of values that really show who you are. And this creates a kind of stabilizer that allows you to live in flow for really longer periods of time. It may mean that you radiate a magnetic attraction and inspiration too, based on your authentic self, but that's a kind of a byproduct rather than the reason that you would aim to nurture this.
Great. And then the seventh principle that you talk about in the book is, I hope it's pronounced Zenren, and it's about mastery. So how do you achieve that?
Yeah, absolutely. Good pronunciation. The Chinese word for mastery is Zenren. And basically, it aligns very closely with the idea of mastering the ability to live in flow. And in both of these aspects of mastery, you are being true, genuine, and authentic, but not merely to your own values, but also to how the cosmos ticks in the way that you've come to see it through your simplicity and clarity of vision. So now this mastery, it's not mastery over the world or mastery over other people, or it's not even mastery of a particular task. It is actually mastery over yourself, including the way that the Tao lives in you and the way that it lives in your interaction. So you might also end up with mastery over the world or people or a task, but that would just purely be a byproduct of mastery of yourself. Whereas in contrast, a strategy of somewhat artificially scheming and contriving for success is unlikely to bring you mastery over the world, as most dictators have eventually discovered. So one of my favorite quotes from Taoism illustrates how the master lives and also what it's like to live in flow most or all the time. And I mentioned these lines at the beginning of our chat, and they come from a book and a man called Zhuangzi, who was a Taoist of the late 4th century BC. And as I mentioned, Bruce Lee, the martial artist, often used to quote it. Moving, be like water. Still, be like a mirror. Respond like an echo. And as I mentioned, this, what does this mean? Well, moving like water means to find the best way forward in a way that's effortless and nourishes other people. Being like a mirror is, as we saw with the principles of Pu and simplicity and clarity, means to see and reflect on the cosmos in an accurate way and without distortion, and respond like an echo links in with the things that we talked about in terms of the principles of Wu Wei. And Ziran means to act intuitively and spontaneously without overthinking. So for me, those three lines kind of sum up what mastery is, and it's those principles of Taoism have really endured for millennia. But this notion of Zenren or mastery is perhaps even more relevant to us now than it was to the Taoists 3,000 years ago, because our own world is a much more hectic, accelerating and globally connected place. And by becoming a Zenren or master, or nearly so, we can find kind of contentment without the increasingly complicated task of optimizing all the time. We can find beauty in the mundane things, and it can help us sidestep problems and ailments such as boredom and loneliness and depression. And these principles can keep us balanced when the unexpected happens to us, as is increasingly likely these days. So these are the benefits, really, of living in flow. You know, being in flow, you just do experience a lot of joy and fulfillment, but it also makes you more resilient. And if you can do that over the long term, that's the real benefit.
Well, that really sounds great. And I hope more people will be able to implement those principles into their lives using your book, which is very helpful. And then I have one final question for you. And so what would be your top three tips for anyone who is working to live more in a flow? What would be the first steps they would take?
Okay, I think three things. Firstly, I think strengthening your awareness of the fact that it is possible to live in a state of flow for long periods of time and what the benefits are of doing that are. You can do that by noticing which of your friends or family or colleagues seem to be living in that state, which is typically calm but productive and joyful. It's not a passive state of floating and going with the flow all the time. It's an active state. But seeing which of your friends or people you actually know are in this kind of state, and that'll give you confidence that it's actually achievable and kind of worth going for. So that's the first one, is awareness. I think the second one then is to have a simple program that fits you. I mean, the purpose of this book, for example, is not to make you into a Taoist, but it's to point out some things. Some of those things will resonate more with you than other things. But finding out a program that is going to help you live in flow more automatically and intuitively. Most people need, eventually this becomes an automatic way of living, but most people need to make a conscious effort to kind of get into it, to tweak their mindset. And normally by doing a few daily practices, So my second tip is to reflect on which of these principles we discussed kind of going to work for you. Jot down a simple program that may or may not include things like meditation or aiming to do some bit of Wu Wei every day, or reflecting at the end of the day what yin and yang you have noticed during the course of the day. Whatever the program is, it doesn't have to be a complicated one. What are the few things that you're going to do? And then I think thirdly, there's the how you stay motivated and disciplined in getting to be more automatic in this flow state. And obviously that involves adopting some new habits. One way to do that is to use an idea from that very well-known book, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Excellent book. He talks about the three steps for creating a new habit. Number one, cue. Number two, process. Number three, reward. So if you want to develop, for example, your habit of noticing how yin-yang influence events, you could define a cue to remind you to pay attention to it, and then also to know what your process, for example, of reflection is, and then to recognize what your reward would be for it. So the third tip is to try and find some way, whether you use Charles Duhigg's approach or not, of staying motivated and disciplined in developing this ability to live in flow.
Well, those were some fantastic tips, Max. Thank you very much. And it was a very interesting conversation overall. And I would encourage our listeners to, of course, go and buy your book, The Power of the Tao, so they can read more about those seven principles. But thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today. It was very insightful.
Thank you. Dale, pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. We are now also on TikTok, so make sure you follow us at Lit Publishing. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.